Hi.
Hello, my name is Sharon and I am an alcoholic. Welcome to the Beacon Group's noon step meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. In an effort to lessen distractions to others and to respect our speaker, you will not be able to unmute yourself during the meeting. Let's start this meeting with a moment of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problems and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. This is an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome to attend. But we ask that only alcoholics participate. If you are new to AA or new to the Beacon Group, we strongly recommend home group membership and sponsorship. If you are new and not so new and are looking for a sponsor, please put your name and number in the chat. If you have worked all 12 steps as outlined in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, have had a spiritual experience, and are willing to sponsor, please put your name and number in the chat. The chat will remain open during the meeting, except while the speaker is sharing. Also in the chat, you will find our AA quote of the day. The quote source will always be from AA literature. Our speaker will share for 30 minutes on the step of the day, and then we will split into breakout rooms for small group discussions. Each group has a moderator who will divide the time equally and invite each person to share. Questions are encouraged during the sharing part of the meeting. When you share, please be sure your environment is quiet and free of distractions. Breakout room discussions end at 12:54, followed by day counts, announcements, and the Lord's Prayer. And I have asked Shelley if she would read the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous.
This
Hold
will
on. Hold
Jim's
on.
getting
I'm getting
for you.
there.
Okay.
Give me 1 second.
All right.
I was doing three things. All right. Let me get back to Zoom. Let me share my screen. All right, let's do this. All right.
Hi, family. I'm Shelly. I'm an alcoholic. The 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so will injure them or others. Ten, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, We try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thanks for letting me serve.
Thank you, Shelley. Thank you, Kim. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Today we will hear a talk on step 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. And step 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Please give a warm welcome to Rena from Punta Gorda, Florida. I hope I said that right. Welcome. You have 30 minutes.
Okay. Yes, you said it's Punta Gorda. That's absolutely right. And I am an alcoholic. My name is Rena, and I'm a member of the Eye Opener group. That's my home group in Punta Gorda, Florida. What else? My sobriety date is October 16th, 1975. And if I hang on for 2 more years, actually it's a year and a half, but who's counting? I'll get to be 50. I don't know how that happened. Don't ask. But at any rate, there you have it. I have been enamored of AA ever since I succumbed to the fact that I could not do it on my own good old willpower. And I grow and grow because I cannot believe how little I know. And the longer I'm sober, the less I know, it seems, and there's more to learn. But anyway, let me qualify a little bit before I talk about 8 and 9. And that is, I was a normal person that hated my life ever since I was a little kid. We moved all the time because my dad was in the military. And the reason I know that this was not normal is that I had a brother and sister who loved to move. They looked forward to meeting new friends. And what I did was I learned to read, and I sat in the background and sulked. And I did that for until I found alcohol, actually. I was not social. I was, when you're 100% self-centered and it's all about you, how can you possibly be social? Because those people don't mean anything to me. They're just out there to do what I want them to do, right? And I tried. My favorite pages of the big book are pages 60 to 62, where it talks about we tried harder. I tried harder. But I finally, at the end, I was drinking around the clock. I wasn't doing anything else. I was having convulsions if I quit drinking too suddenly. And I was a mess, just a mess and full of despair. And I had a phone call from a woman I did not know. She called me by mistake. And for some reason, I answered the phone. I had alienated everybody, but I answered the phone. And we ended up talking all day. She ended up, for some reason, we talked about drinking, and she had 6 years in AA. And the rest is history. She said that night, she said, "Rena, this is a spiritual program. It's not religious. It's a spiritual program. I suggest that you get on your knees tonight. You've gone 12 hours without a drink. Ask God for help with the remaining 12 hours, and then you'll have 24 hours. And that's how we do it in AA, one day at a time." And I told her the truth. I don't believe in God. And there was this long pause. And she said, "Then you lose." And I was so afraid of losing the only person that I had ever identified with as a human being, because she talked to me all day long about her drinking, her shame, her guilt, her remorse, and how she came into AA and worked the program and turned her life around. So out of my mouth popped the most profound thing I probably will ever say. I said, "Maybe I'm a little bit spiritual." And that was the beginning for me. That was the mustard seed. And I did as she suggested, feeling totally humiliated. And funny, when I stood up asking this power that I didn't believe in, didn't think was going to work, to help me stay away from a drink that night, I went to bed and I slept without having a drink for the first time in years. And I called her the next morning and said, "I went 24 hours. And she said, "You're now a card-carrying member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Welcome home." And it's been that way ever since. I have been extremely excited about the program. It's changed everything, everything. There's nothing about me that it hasn't changed. And of course, when I got sober and I ended up with a sponsor that I had for more than 40 years and dearly loved that woman, and I miss her. what I did, I looked at those steps on the wall and I said, oh, I'm going to go do 8 and 9 because that way I can go to everybody and say, hey, I just discovered I'm an alcoholic. That's what's wrong with me. None of that stuff I did was my fault. You know, you got to forgive me. I had everything wrong about that. And thank God I listened to my sponsor. My first spiritual awakening, I think, was when I told that woman I would do as she suggested and get on my knees. Me following the directions of somebody else is the most spiritual thing I've ever done. And so Tommy said, Rena, those steps are numbered for a reason. And the reason is that by the time you get to 8 and 9, your motives for doing those two steps are going to be entirely different than what you do now. I suggest you start with 1. And we did. And I went through, like everybody in this room went through, working all the steps that, to the best of my ability. I think I was 7 months sober when I did my first 4th step and did my 5th step with Tommy, of course. Had very little insight at that time. I do the 12 steps every year. And every year I find something different because I've changed. You know, if I stayed the same, I wouldn't stay in AA. I really believe that the whole concept of growing spiritually is the most exciting thing that's ever happened. So anyway, we got up to 8 and 9. And here's what she said. Step 8. Made a list of all of those we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. And some of this I'm going to read because it's direct quotes out of the big book. But the alcoholic is like a tornado roaring his way through the lives of others. By that time, I could see some of the damage I had done, not only to my parents, but certainly to my daughter and to 3 husbands at that point. And I knew something was wrong about me, but I just didn't really know what it was until I had worked on the 4th step with Tommy and ended up making my list. But she asked me one time, why do you do steps 8 and 9? And I had no answer. I said, because they're there. And she said, it'll let you out of prison. Because up until now, all you've been doing is working on you, God, and with me. And this is the first time you step outside of yourself and deal with other people. And it's been other people that have been your problem all along and how I react to them. It's not the other people, obviously. It's me. So, you know, it turns out that the people that I resent, they have power over me. And one example real quickly is... I went to a meeting and I got a resentment against a person in that meeting. I don't remember why, it doesn't matter. But I decided after a couple of nights, I wasn't going to go back to that meeting. So I let that person dictate where I went to meetings. That was giving total power to that person because I resented them. And Tommy pointed this out to me and it took me a while to understand it. But once I understood it, I could see my whole life had been like that. I had been governed by the will of other people and how they acted towards me. We all know the thing about the people that you walk into a room, there's 100 people, 99 say, hi, Rena, and the other ones doesn't look at you. And that's the one you concentrate on, right? And if that's not control, I don't know what is. So you know, I do know that it's very clear in the big book. I cannot get over my drinking until I've cleaned up my side of the street, because my first action that I took was to make this list. And, you know, the resistance to step 8 is just enormous because I'm not thinking about 8. I'm thinking about 9 and the humiliation of going and saying, I'm sorry and all that stuff. And but, you know, admitting my faults? Oh, no. And then Tommy pointed out, Rena, that's step 9. Don't do step 9 when you're on step 8. Okay. So admitted, you know, that we had harmed other people. Bill W. writes, instincts in collision which cause mental, physical, spiritual damage to people. That's his definition, or the definition of the big book, of harm. There's harms of omission, harms of commission. The harms of commission weren't too hard to find because I had run roughshod over three husbands, one daughter, two parents, and a whole lot of other people. And I could take a look at those. But the omission was more difficult. Those are things I didn't do, you know, that I neglected to do. And one of them was, and I know mothers will relate to this, was I was a terrible mother. You know, I was so into drinking and doing my thing that I really neglected my daughter. She ended up being raised pretty much by her grandmother. And I never even thought about it. And today, you know, we have a good relationship because I have worked on it, you know. But the first time I saw the harm I had done to her that wasn't directly physical, I don't mean I hit her or anything. I don't mean that. But just the fact that I wasn't there, I was totally unavailable. But seeing what that did to her was really something else. The guilt and the remorse was just horrible. And it's taken me a lot of years to work through that with the help of my sponsor and God. Let's see. The other thing she pointed out to me was that there's a big difference between an apology and an amend. An apology is where my ego says, I've got to apologize. That makes you above me. You know, I am below you. And that means you have power over me. Because what if I apologize and you don't say, oh, it was nothing? And that happened one time. I went, but under the right circumstances, I went to a doctor and I apologized. He said, I don't care what happened. You know, get out of my office. And if I had done that when I was newly sober, I would have been crushed. So I did not make apologies. You know, you can't apologize for wrecking people's lives. An amend, and this is a quote, to remove or correct faults in, to rectify, to grow or become better by reforming oneself, to make, put, or set right, to remedy, to correct, to put right by adjustment, to straighten out. So my intention is to remove the faults in the actions I took. And so I'm going to amend it, just like we amend a constitution. I'm going to fix it. There's no fixing in an apology. So writing this list meant that I'm getting ready to take some action. I'm going to take direct action where I admit or rectify a situation, or I'm going to take indirect action where I change my behavior. So it says in the big book, made a list of all the persons we had harmed and became willing. If we haven't the will to do this, we ask God until it comes. Not just acknowledge the wrong, I'm going to do something about it. This is an action program. One of the best sentences I ever heard in AA was, I have to act my way into good thinking. I can't think my way into good acting. So on the list, but before I started the list, Tommy talked to me about forgiveness. Because unless I can forgive someone, I really can't make a good amends. She did the same thing with me with the fourth step. And I had to take a look and see that like it says in the big book, you know, that there are other people that are sicker than I am, you know, that perhaps they are spiritually sick too. Not instead of me, but too. And so I worked first on, before I made my list, I made first on forgiving anybody that harmed me, because all I had to do was compare what I had done. And I knew that God forgave me, so why shouldn't I forgive them? So I started carrying a notebook because I made my list from the fourth step, the resentments, but I had a lot of other things that going on where it wasn't just a resentment. You know, it was like I was rude to a clerk in a grocery store. You know, I had harmed a lot of people that I didn't have any resentment against. And so anyone we harmed, it says, not just the people that I resent. So I stick to my stuff. I don't involve anybody else in this, you know, putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done. We resolutely looked at our own mistakes. And so I took this list after I carried my notebook around and wrote out these names. As I would, you know, I'd be in the grocery store and I'd think, oh, yeah, I remember that now. And so I'd write a name, even if it was grocery store clerk, you know, it didn't matter. Whoever it was, I put them on the list. And when I had my list, I divided them into three categories. And by the way, I did all of this, not the little list making with the notebook, but all of this list, the whole 8 and 9 with my sponsor's help. We would get together and work on this. And she would get me out of my ego, you know, Oh dear, my watch. Sorry. I divided them into three categories: the amends I can make right now, the amends I can make as soon as possible, and the amends I will never make. And I reviewed the list with each amend, and I planned what I would say, and I would rehearse it with her. And I put the name on two calendars so I'd have a list with dates, because otherwise I'm a great procrastinator. I could be doing my amends to this day. So I gave her one copy and me one copy. The amends I can make right now went on the this week, next week list. Family, friends, you know, people that are close to me that I see a lot. And amends I can make as soon as possible. I owed one to a cousin, and we were going to see each other at Thanksgiving, and this was in October. So I didn't make it right then. I waited till I could be in person and talk to her about it. So that was fine. And amends I will never make. That's the tricky one, because I thought, oh, great, the ones I don't want to make, I'll just put on that list. That's not what it means at all. You know, it means that, for example, I can't make it in person with my parent, with my mother anyway, because she had died, and with other people that were I had run across in my world travels, there's no way I could find them. But I became willing to do it. And I asked God, if you want me to make the amend, you'll have to put them somewhere where I can see them. And this happened one time. I was walking down the street, and this lady that I had no idea she lived in Florida was walking towards me. Can you believe that? And so I was able to say, hey, let me talk to you for a few minutes. And that was great. Now, the tricky one, and this gets into some people will object to this, but I say, I made amends to me for my self-hatred. This is not a normal thing to do. A human being is not supposed to hate themselves. And I did. And I confused my behavior with who I really was. And, oh dear, there goes the fire alarm. Well, it's a test. But what I did was I made behavioral amends to my self-hatred. I stopped doing things that I didn't like about myself doing, like sneaking or lying or whatever. And I decided to do things that I liked about myself. I do know that to get self-esteem, I have to do esteemable actions. And that was my bellwether and my amend to myself in terms of my self-hatred. Now, I also made amends to my body, because I had so destroyed it with alcohol. Drinking around the clock and not eating is not good for you. And so I joined a gym, never done anything like that in my life. And I got a book on nutrition and a book on vitamins, and I never looked back. I still work out every day and still do the things that I'm supposed to do. That does not mean I act, you know, perfectly with the nutrition. I love ice cream. But the behavioral amends are what I made. I changed my behavior towards me and towards my body. And I did not take any step 9 actions in step 8. I set up times to meet with the people that I was going to either see now or when possible. And I began step 9. So step 9 made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. And Bill W. says at the end of step 9, above all, we should be absolutely sure that we're not delaying because we're afraid. The readiness to take the full consequences of our past acts and to take responsibility for the well-being of others at the same time is the very spirit of step 9. And between you and me, I really think that step 8 is the most important one, because it sets it all up. You know, without step 8, I couldn't have run around saying, making amends to people. Step 8 is the kind of getting ready step, let's say. And step 9 is the action step. So right away, I did family, as I said, friends, coworkers, the grocery store clerk, where I always went to the grocery store. And I told you about my cousin, you know, so that as soon as possible. I don't know how I'm doing on there was one doctor that I had gone to, and I'd really created a ruckus in his office. And so I made an appointment to go see him. and I took the pamphlet, you know, to the physicians and gave that to him and explained about alcoholism and stuff like that. And he said, "That's great, but you owe me money." I didn't pay the bill. So I got to make financial amends too. I've been told that if you want to make financial amends, take some cash with you, you know? So the never, you know, that's where I said the prayer to God about it. I'm willing to do it, but I need God's help in having them come into my vision. And I'm not saying, well, the ones I don't want to make amends to, I'll put on the never list. That's not the spirit of step nine. So, you know, in step eight, we've talked about what amends action should be appropriate, because as we all know, some of them, I was not going to go to the wife of one of somebody's husband that I'd slept with and say, "Gee, I'm really sorry," you know, or whatever. This took a lot of help with my sponsor, because it's very delicate what to do. And then rehearsing was really important for me, because I get scatterbrained and I forget what I'm going to say and everything. And if I have a kind of a focus, it makes it a lot easier. And I consulted with my sponsor about who I'm saying it to and the content of my message. No ego involved. I was not trying to say the apology bit, you know. I've made living amends to pretty much everybody I know, and even those I don't know, because I don't behave the way I used to. The living amends to my parents, you know. When I did my fourth step, this was interesting. I was taught to go from the prosecution table of the resentments around to the defense table and see how it looked from that angle. And that made a whole big difference in what my resentments looked like. With my parents, I had the resentments against my parents because they moved me all the time and they did this and they did that. But I'll tell you what, I was a terrible daughter, not a good daughter at all. And I had to take a look at that. So in their defense, it took all the sting out of it. You know, it took all of the juice out of the resentment, and it was flat like a balloon. What are you going to do with that? You know? So is it worth it? You bet. And the whole, as I say, I do this every year, and every year it gets more esoteric and it gets less and less, but in terms of intensity. But I will never forget the first go around of my 12 step adventure. It's worth it because, let me see if I can do this real quick. I don't have my big book in this room. I think it's 86, 83, isn't it? Where the promises are. No, that's a family. I'm sorry. But I would assume that everybody's familiar with the 12 promises that come after step nine. And it's wonderful. One of the things that I love about them, if anybody has a copy right now and would like to read it, that would be great.
I can do that.
Great.
All right. Ninth step promises. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them.
Thank you so much, Courtney. I appreciate that. Now I got to put my 2 cents worth in. I think that they are very extravagant promises. I mean, I can't believe what's happened. You know, they're happening sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. And it's really neat that as I grow and change in the program, the meaning of the promises grow and change too, so that I have different ways of looking at things. It's kind of like I'm a pilot, and one of the things that we do is an angle of approach, and my angle of approach changes as I change. And it's just a different perspective, you know, and we talk about how we need a new pair of glasses, and the AA is a total new pair of glasses. So I think I'm about out of time, but I want to tell you how much I appreciate you all being here and listening to me talk about steps 8 and 9.